Hey, everybody. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Before we get to the interview, October 28th to the 30th, I'm going to be headlining at the West Palm Beach Improv in West Palm Beach, Florida. Come on out. Hope everybody's recovering from Hurricane Matthew. Come on out. Have a few laughs. October 28th to the 30th, West Palm Beach Improv, West Palm Beach, Florida. And please send links around to the podcasts and give them to your friends, your family, and review the podcast on iTunes. It's always great and always helpful if you give some nice reviews. So just go to iTunes. You can review the podcast there. And check me out, October 28th to the 30th, West Palm Beach Improv. My guest this week, CNN news anchor Brooke Baldwin. Really great conversation with Brooke about how she got into journalism, what her day is like covering breaking news. I really like this interview because it gives you a window into somebody that you see every day that has a big impact on the news you get and how you get your news. And it gives you a window into what this person's like. Really cool interview. She's a great person. Enjoy it.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the show. On with me right now, my friend, my pal, Brooke Baldwin. We are here at her offices at CNN. Nice to see you.
So fun to have you in my little 5x7
space. Yeah, you got a lot of cool stuff. I get the Boston Strong
I'm a bit
thing.
Of a hoarder. Well, I like people it. Send me stuff, and I just keep it.
You got the picture of you and Dolly Parton, which
you
I
know,
like.
You know, a little Dolly, little Broadway stuff.
I know you're a big music fan. And then an amazing picture you just showed me.
Of me flying.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about this adventure in you. Like, you did stand-up, and you won a contest at a club where I work, the comic strip, and you climbed Kilimanjaro. And this picture that we're looking at, you're flying, what do they call these?
Like,
you're
hang gliding. I jumped off a mountain over the weekend in Brazil. So, I'm a little insane. Yes. I think I'm a little nuts.
So now that's something I wouldn't, like, just if I didn't know, like, from the outside as a viewer.
Yeah. You wouldn't look at me and think insanity?
Yeah.
Daredevil?
No.
I don't give off that vibe, Paul?
A little, no, actually, you give off the vibe of a chick you want to have a beer with.
Yeah.
Like a real, like, real person.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, and genuine, which I think is why you do so well. And
Thank
your ratings have pumped up and all that.
Yeah.
So what was the motivation for the hand gliding?
Well, I figured this year I climbed a mountain, so why not jump off one? I was in Rio, like, for 3 nights over the weekend and was with my little baby brother, who's the wild one who jumps out of planes. And so I've never done that. For me, that sounds wild. Like, jumping out of a perfectly decent plane sounds insane. And so
I'm just thinking that parachute's not going to open.
I mean, well, there was no parachute situation in hang gliding.
Right. But, no, but you know, if you're jumping out of a plane.
There, at least you have that. Mm. But jumping out of a plane, I don't know. Mm. But so the notion of, you know, I sort of said yes. You know when you say yes to things in life before fully thinking them through? Sure, hang gliding as I'm having
there
a caipirinha was lovely.
There was no alcohol involved in saying yes.
No, totally sober.
It was very nice of you, though. You took your brother to give him, like, a wild
weekend. He's about to become a dad, and so, you know, I'm about to become a first-time aunt, and so I said, let's go to Rio and have some fun before, you know, your life gets rocked, and he said, okay. So, yeah, so we went to Brazil, and we made some friends down there, and a buddy we made said, this hang gliding, this place is incredible, and I said, all right. So we drove up the side of this mountain, passing some of this one favela, get to the tip top, and basically you just see this platform and people practicing their running in tandem, and then you see these massive hang glide, you know, pieces of equipment, and the guy says, you know, at least he spoke English more or less, and we ran, and you just, it's like against everything that you should, that your body is telling you, but you run off a platform off the side of a mountain,
yeah,
and you drop for a second, your stomach is like wah, and then you fly. That's what they call it, that you fly. And so we went round and round over people's homes and pools and over buildings and over power lines. Hello.
Are you just praying for wind at that point?
You know, like, we had great, it was a great wind day. In fact, of course, I'm such a nerd journalist that as I'm hang gliding over Rio, I start asking him, I'm like, so what do you think of your president of your country, Dilma Rousseff?
Really?
I totally did.
That's totally
I totally
awesome.
Did. And I was like, do you think Rio's prepared for the 2016 Olympics? Like, I'm interviewing him mid-flight.
And he's like, can we just focus on the task at hand?
No, he was like, no, actually, I'm not a really big fan of the president. And no, we're not ready for the Olympics. What's your next question? I mean, it was like amazing and fascinating and crazy. And we landed running on the beach.
Wow.
I'm here to live to tell about
and
it.
And you've like, you, that's like you land.
You land on the sand and he's like, you ready to run? You ready to run? And you just.
Jesus. Where does this come from? Because you climbed Kilimanjaro. Were you always like this as a kid? Clearly a journalist.
I mean, I think what I am is a risk taker. I was telling somebody recently that I like to I shouldn't say this out loud, but so I think I like to flirt with risk and danger a little bit. Listen, I mean, I think what I do sitting in front of a national audience and a lot of, like today, having a teleprompter blanked for 2 hours because we get breaking news over something, like that in a sense is really having to be on and paying attention and know what you're doing and talking about. And that in a sense is one risk, I guess.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
And then, I don't know, like live life, man. I don't, it's so cliche, but I'm down.
What motivated the Kilimanjaro, like?
The Kilimanjaro thing was...
Because there's nothing about that that, like, you're cold, you're tired.
Yeah, sit me on a beach with the margarita any day.
Cucumber
and habanero margarita, and I'm a happy girl. But what happened was, I'm 35, I had never been to Africa. This is something that had been on my bucket list for some time, just going to Africa. Yeah. And I was sitting on the F train going to Brooklyn with a girlfriend, and I said, Africa, and then I was aware of Tanzania, and I have friends in this part of the world, and I said, well, what about climbing a mountain? But I hadn't actually, like, read about it or thought about it, and the more I started doing my research and homework, the more I thought, you know what, 35, I've never been to Africa, like, I want to climb a mountain.
Yeah.
And so I didn't care about being cold. I mean,
Can we back up, though? Maybe you start small, like Hunter Mountain, just outside of
New
York.
And the funny thing is, Paul, like, I haven't hiked since 2003, but I mean, I work out, I care about my health, I felt really strong and healthy to go, but I'm not some super granola hiker chick.
Yeah.
But I think it was Africa, it was the unknown, it was the challenge, and also just like the culture I'm fascinated by. So it was this whole like odd amalgamation of coming and meeting this who was like right there on my wall, who I WhatsApp with every week, and so meeting him and having these Tanzanian porters, I mean, we're six Americans climbing this mountain, and we have these dozens and dozens of porters helping us up, and them singing us into camp with these old, like, Kiswahili Tanzanian hymns. I mean, I wept like a baby the first day.
Why? Just so tired.
No, like, just overwhelmed by this whole, like, in Africa, I am climbing one of the seven summits of the world, and these people who were literally breaking their backs to get us to our goal.
What struck you about the people? I mean, because I think in America, we kind of have it pretty good. Not everybody, obviously, but then you go to other cultures that, and yet they're happy, right? And they're sort of, they have a perspective maybe that we don't have, and maybe it's because we're wrapped up in go and climbing and social climbing and doing better at your job and all of that.
That's interesting. I'm thinking as you're talking, like, maybe they do have a different perspective, maybe they're more evolved than maybe like I am, but I think, listen, I mean, I think it's not perfect over there, and I think these young 20-something Tanzanian porters who are, by the way, smoking and dancing and carrying all our crap while we're like schmucks carrying our little cute day packs from North Face, you know, I think they are, you know, making this money to be able to go to their university and then to make something of themselves. I mean, the poverty is insane and extreme, and I've never witnessed anything like that when I went over to, I'm blanking on the name of the, Zanzibar, the island. But I think that they do have a mature perspective, and especially my mountain guide, my life guide, Dismiss, just has this perspective, I think, not having what we have, and I think also not being as plugged in. I mean, everything is slower, like getting on the internet, you know? But actually, like, I was with my girlfriend, and we finished the mountain, and we actually had cell service like 7 days later, and we were on our soul-sucking devices for an hour and didn't talk to each other, and we were finally like, let's turn these phones back off.
It must have been so great.
It was incredible.
I'm just constantly, like, I'm checking email for no reason. Like, I just checked it. Like, it's ridiculous.
Like, why? When you're waiting for an elevator, I'm checking my Twitter. Why? What am I going to gain from that?
It's ridiculous. Any point in the hike. And by the way, you are pretty granola. You're sitting here in flannel and boots. No, I'm just kidding.
Lumberjack Brooke Wellwood.
Little bit of a beard. The makeup is amazing.
They cover up a lot. You don't see it. It's a magic room, not for nothing.
What? Any point in the hike where you're like, or the climb, maybe this wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, I had one point. You're basically on the mountain for 6 days, so this was the final night. So you do the summit climb, you start at midnight, and you hike for 8 hours, and you have, like, the moon and your little headlamps to carry you up the switchbacks to get up to the glacier.
And what's the weather like at this
point? It's basically, like, winter. So you climb through all these different climates. You start in the jungle, and you go upwards. And so this final night, this was my mistake. I literally put on, like, every single article of clothing I had, And I mean, I looked like I was going to rob a bank. Just picture that. And I put on too much. And so after the first hour, I think what happened was I overheated. I mean, I literally saw stars. I couldn't breathe. I had a real moment. I had, like, as we say in the South, like a come to Jesus moment where I really thought I wasn't going to make it. And they were going to have to, I had to sit down. I mean, it was all, I wasn't able to form words. I was having, like, motor skill issues.
Were they giving you oxygen?
I never got oxygen, but what it was is I think I overheated and I was dehydrated. And so they sat me down. We had to practice this breathing technique that we'd learned on the mountain. And they just, I kept, like, I was chugging water. And after a few minutes, I just, like, had that little pep talk and kept going. But I had the vision of all my other friends going up and telling me about it as I was, like, you know, sucking wind down at down camp.
And you're sitting there like, I can't be the
I
one
that
doesn't.
I can't be that girl.
I can't be
I
the one.
I will not be.
But another party was like, man, I want to be at the Ritz
I mean,
right now.
I mean, that would be kind of, go Kilimanjaro helicopter. Like, yeah, no.
And then we'd see you on CNN, ironically.
I know, talking about
our own Brooke Baldwin.
Right, who didn't make it.
Great. So quickly tell me about the stand-up. And you won the contest. That's another thing where you put yourself out there. Now, I'm a stand-up, and I know it can be nerve-wracking.
Can I just tell you, I have so much respect for what you do, like being at the Daily Show.
Dealing with drunk hecklers?
I mean, honestly, like coming up with that stuff, thinking of material that people would relate to and find funny, and being able to, like, deliver it and pause when you... I love going to stand-up. Yeah. Love, love, love it. But I can quite confidently say it's something I never want to do again in my lifetime.
But was it another one of these
buckets? See that little trophy up there?
Oh, my God, yeah. Look at that.
Little champion trophy.
That's awesome. It's a trophy of a comedian crying.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's a crying after being stuck in a room with me on stage for 5 minutes.
You won the contest, just to be clear, everybody listening.
Apparently.
Did you write all this stuff yourself?
So these folks approached me. It's like the New York Funniest Reporter competition they have it every fall. It was at the Comic Strip, which is like a legit place.
Yeah, it's one of the major clubs in the city. I work there.
So, first of all, that's not nothing. Second of all, this whole thing is organized, and they had a couple of different comedians. And so this guy, Jeffrey Gurian, who does, I think, Comedy Matters TV, and talks to a lot of stand-ups. I'm sure you've talked to him. He helped me come up with material, and I think I had an advantage only in the sense that I had just moved up from New York to New York from Atlanta, where I'd been based. And so we sort of used this whole, like, New York, new, like, my observations of, like, moving to New York.
An outsider coming in.
Yeah, like the crazy nature of the Whole Foods downstairs where it's like playing bingo when you're waiting in line to get your, like, kale and your $18 smoothie. Or, you know, just watching people crossing the street and you can tell tourists by how they, like, literally wait for the green sign.
Right. That must have done really well, though.
It got a good laugh in the beginning, which is what I think made me, like, relax.
Yeah, that,
you know,
first laugh, right?
The first laugh, and then I was like in it to win it.
Yeah, boy, when it doesn't go well, it seems like it goes by forever and ever and ever,
which I'm sure never happens to you.
No, well, sometimes you just don't connect, you know. And Jon Stewart tells a story. He was in front of 5,000 people at Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah,
and he just couldn't get them, and he just had to get through it.
Yeah,
and he goes, surely at some point somebody will just, like, even just groan or something, and there's just silence, and so
that would be miserable.
It's just becomes this thing, but. But you have chops because what you do, like today's a perfect example, where you have to turn on a dime. And this was discussed in a Variety article about you, that you, that ability to go from soft news to hard news and back. And you know, you have this, your journalism major and Spanish major at UNC Chapel. Tar Heels did well, Sweet 16.
Go Heels. Yeah, we've done better. We've done better.
Keep going. And this all stays in, by the way, so that's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah, this is somebody
knocking on my door.
Yeah,
who goes there?
It was President Clinton. We're having him wait.
Close the door. Sorry, Mr. President. Much more important.
I'll be right back. So, the thing that struck me is, like, you said first of all, I went to law school, and when you practice law, it's different than what you learn in law school. No, I'm not. Hey, you want to see my trophy?
Hey. No.
Is journalism like that? In other words, like, what you learn in law school, you learn the sort of technical aspects and you learn the law, but the practice of it is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Is journalism like that?
You totally do not have to go to journalism school. I have young people flood my inbox all the time or asking me advice. And I, you know, I think it helped in the sense that you do learn how to cut a package and, you know,
what is
like
a package
mean? You know, editing a piece on tape with narration and sound. Like, right. You learn all the technical stuff, but really the best thing to do in journalism is to go intern. Go, like, live it, eat it, breathe it. My first internship was actually CNN. In fact, they turned me down, and I had to, like, call the guy up and be like, listen, please, I really want, this is my hometown, I'm from Atlanta, like, let me in the damn building.
You're a journalism major at a major school.
I don't know. But they did. But so, you know, you don't have to go to J school. I think it really helped. It helped me. But having that practical experience, I'm sure, like, work clerking in a law firm or putting yourself out there is, you know, more important. But you do have to, like, pass the bar on your sin. I don't have to, like, pass the test. I just, like, have to get hired. Have five people watch in my first little TV market.
No, but you were, but that's the thing. So in that internship, you say, that was the bug.
Definitely did not grow up, had no desire to be on TV whatsoever, but always was
You went to NASA at 13.
I was a space nerd for sure. I was like a space person. I took math, but I also loved English and I had a penchant for language, but I never remember, like, growing up and having the local news on or the news on in my house. But we always had the paper and Time Magazine and things like that. And I think I've also been always been inquisitive and a leader. And
you mean you weren't drawing hearts of, like, your initials and Peter
Walter
Jennings?
Walter Cronkite.
You didn't have pictures
BB plus WC for Eva.
You didn't have Cronkite's, like, picture put on a pillowcase, then you
I
hug
didn't.
It and kiss it?
I might now, but good thing you're not in my
Dan
house
Rather,
looking at my
maybe?
Nerdy house. No, but so I think going to J school, I think really it was the CNN internship where you're, like, sitting in a newsroom and it's so geeky, but the click of the keyboard, the noise, the insanity, the being on the front row of history, I just started talking to people and I was like, oh my God, I'm like you know?
Yeah.
And you find these like-minded people, and then it was like a drug, like, I wanted it and I wanted it constantly. And so I was going to be a producer behind the scenes, and then had somebody say, you should do the anchor thing. And so I...
Is that
lucky?
So after the internship, that's when you West Virginia. You were in three markets: DC, West Virginia.
So I graduated school in Chapel Hill, and then I went to, there's like 200 TV markets, one being New York, 200 being like East Bumble, right. Alaska, and I was in 192 in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I did 2 years there. And so when all my friends were, you know, living in New York, and I was like, I'm going to work at 2 a.m. on a Saturday and Sunday. Don't call me right now.
I'm at an Applebee's. I'm alone having dessert.
I mean, my good time in West Virginia was Friday night at the Chili's, baby. Bottomless chips and salsa. It's really good.
I worked in Huntington, West Virginia, which is the market.
I lived in Huntington.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And the people were real nice.
Totally
nice.
Marshall University, go Herd.
Yeah, it's a small town.
It's
not New York.
Right there at Kentucky, where their big thing was Billy Ray Cyrus.
Right,
Ashley,
right,
Kentucky.
Right. But now, are you thinking to yourself, what am I doing here? Or this is good? See, I think it's good that you cut your chop. Same thing with comedy. Like, you don't come to New York to start doing comedy.
Totally the same thing.
Because you got to, like, be bad somewhere else where nobody sees you and figure it out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, first impressions are the most lasting, and it takes longer, I think, to break into a market if you start there and you don't.
Yes. I tell people all the time, start small, make your mistakes, be a deer in the headlights, you know, whatever it is, cut your chops smaller, and then you'll work your way. And I think your work will speak for itself, right? So then I leapt from West Virginia to Washington, D.C., and was a crime reporter, and then came to CNN in 08,
yeah.
And I was a correspondent. But definitely, like, I am a big believer in paying your dues.
Yeah, you fast-tracked
big time.
It, though. You're you fast-tracked
it,
baby. You kicked it, man. So, yes, because here's the thing. If you're in those local markets, you're learning stuff, but your eye's on a bigger market, obviously,
totally.
Like all of us. What was there, as you put it, come to Jesus moment in terms of, like, where you felt like you figured it out as a journalist in
Are
those
small
markets? Are
you kidding? I've not figured it out yet.
Yeah, you have.
No, I have not.
Yes, you're so good.
Oh, thank you.
Of all the shows that I've done with the hosts, you're definitely, and I'm not saying that because you're sitting here. I really am not. I'm not.
Thank you.
It's like, because, like, you get it, and you have a sense of humor, and you can be funny, but you're also smart, and so I don't think that, you know, that's something that's, I think, innate, but also developed.
Mm-hmm.
But there had to be, in those smaller markets, like, that one story where you go, oh, I got that one right, or, oh, I get it now a little bit, or that kind of thing?
I think it was probably, first of all, I think working in a really teeny tiny market and having to produce, edit, roll the teleprompter with my foot, anchor, back to
the show.
Wait,
you have to roll the teleprompter with your foot?
Dude, I am multi-talented.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow, I am high-fiving you right now. Wow.
backwards if you want to stop it and then roll forward. And then sometimes you screw up and you hit it the wrong way and you're sitting there live on TV and it starts going like rolling around. But, you know, it's 6 o'clock like, in the morning on a Saturday when five people are watching. So it's all
cool. It's like patting your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time.
Times a million.
How are you focused on the words and get?
I mean, but honestly,
a good prompt reader has to go beyond the words and connect.
Right, but at 21, I didn't know that.
You know, like I just got through it.
I just need to read what I've written.
I just got through it. Let's go to Applebee's,
okay.
Everybody.
So bottomless queso.
Is it a button that you're hitting on?
So it's like a lever, and then there is a button. So if you want to stop an ad lib, you hit something, and then if you need to go backwards, you.
Jesus.
Yeah. I can't believe I did that.
I can't believe you did it either. You know what? I almost respect that more than climbing Kilimanjaro.
Really?
That's awesome. Because you're on TV.
I know.
It's live.
But listen, it's just like what I do here, where like I'm in the middle of breaking news. I've got four guests on a panel. I'm every so often checking my Twitter. People are telling my in my ear, you got to check your email because we've got this latest development with, let's say, what's happening in this Tsarnaev sentencing, you know, hearing. Yeah. And so I'm like listening to people and checking. It's just,
but you never see it on your face. Oh, that's going on. See, like, I don't know that not that it's ever happened. I'm married, yeah. Whatever, but I being in a relationship with you might be tough because if you're really upset, maybe you can have all this shit going on in your head and you don't show it.
Totally. Actually, all the time people call me out because I have a lot of, I think, facial expression to like, which is probably not a good thing when you're on live TV all the time. They keep my face up
constantly.
No, but I don't
see. Yeah.
I mean, I think I don't have a good poker face, but at the same time, I think I'm pretty good at listening and concentrating and doing a bunch of other stuff you don't see.
Right. That's why it'd be tough to have an argument with you, like if I were your boyfriend,
I'd be like,
and then the inside,
and I'm like,
and I don't really know what's coming next.
You would the wrath of Brooke Baldwin.
You would eviscerate me with the thing. So, let me ask you something. When you're moving from story to story, tell people what your day is like, because I think they'd be fascinated by that, and how you get to that 2 o'clock broadcast.
My show's from 2 to 4, and I'm up at like 6 in the morning, and I'm just honestly like, you know, sitting with my pug and a cup of coffee and on my laptop. And so that's when I start going to, I have my go-to websites, CNN.com, New York Times, Washington Post, Daily Beast, Time, USA Today. That's where I start. And I'll just like, I know generally what the main themes of the day will be based upon the day before.
Right.
But so I'm reading, I probably read differently in the sense that I'm reading pieces to see what the new nuggets would be for the day and which voices I want to talk to for that story for that day. So it'll either be a certain development. I think, oh, cool. I know somebody who'd be fascinating on this, or people who are already quoted in some of the papers that I'm reading, or people who are being talked about would be great guests. So then I'm like, you know, I need to know what's happening so that when I help lead my team meeting at 8:15 in the morning, which I try to be at almost every day, then, you know, we can go from there. And so we sit in on that meeting. That meeting ends at 9. Sometimes I'll hop in our network meeting because I want to see as a network what direction we're going in. Some days I'm like, I'm just going to get a smoothie. and
surf the web, maybe do a little shopping,
you know,
online.
Get on the Googles.
You are in the Time Warner Center.
There's a lot going on. Whole Foods. Whole Foods. and then I'm always in hair and makeup, the magic room at 10:30.
I don't think you need it. I think you look fine.
You're a sweetheart. And then I'm done with that. And then really it's like go time at 11:30. That's when we start knowing which bookings we'll get, because I have to wait until I really know who we're talking to craft my questions.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like your producers then have to, once around 9 o'clock, you picked your story, your producers have to start getting on the phone and finding people to talk about this stuff.
Yeah. So I generally know what the big stories are, but a lot of times it depends on who we get, which is like my questions are predicated upon the guest. And I really am involved. And so a lot of I'm here in New York. I've got people in Atlanta. I've got someone in Chicago, but we all know each other really well. I've been blessed to work with this team for a bunch of years. And so I have people who are assigned to different segments and different themes of the show. And so we'll get on the phone, or I'll have somebody in my office and we'll just be cranking out segments up until showtime. But then some shows get totally turned on its head and all of it goes out the window. If there's breaking,
and how do you
like
feel
today
about that? Is it bum you out because you did so much preparation that you want to get to it, or there's some days where you're like, oh, I'm glad because I wasn't crazy about the day's news that
you
we
know,
were going to do anyway?
You know, that's a great question. Some days, if I'm really married to a segment, which I try not to get emotionally attached, Some days if I'm really excited about a guest, but sometimes we can post tape with that person if they can hang out. Today, I was jazzed. We had breaking news. Mm-hmm. The whole show got thrown out the window. We blanked the teleprompter, but so that happened. And so we found out about that at 1:55 and I'm in the hot seat at 2:00. And so all of a sudden I hear in my ear, like, you're going to have to riff until we get people.
Is the feeling you have in that moment the same feeling? And I don't mean this as a joke. Yeah. When you ran off the cliff to glide, or when you know those kind of adrenaline moments?
A little bit. I think I always know in the end I'll be okay.
Yeah.
I've done this long enough, and I'm well read and invested on whatever story it is. Yeah. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes there's something that happens, and I just have to, like. But then I just become like a viewer, and I'm asking the questions that you would be asking
for
something.
Which is a great place to be.
I don't want to be like smarty pants trying to prove that I think I know something. Let's bring the experts.
No, that's the nice thing about you is you don't put your personality or your ego ahead of the story. Like, you just have that right balance of, you have an opinion, you'll voice it, or you'll ask the hard question. But there are some that are so hell-bent on sort of being the star of the segment when they're hosting the segment, which is the worst thing to be.
Yeah.
A good host lets the story unfold. And I think I think you're great at that. And
thank you.
I know you talked about, you were in Atlanta and then you came to New York,
mm-hmm.
and you had this quote that you said, which was getting to sort of, you were doing a lot of remotes. Like, when I was on with you, it was remote.
Yeah.
I was in New York, and there's nothing like being live with somebody. And you said, speaking with them in person on set makes all the difference. It forces me to be more on my game.
Totally.
In what sense? Because I would almost think you'd have to be more on your game when the person's in a studio far away. But what does that mean?
Being more on my game means when you're sitting next to someone, you really have to know, ingest, be aware of where you want to go, what you want to talk about, versus, like, I may have my prepared questions, but if I'm sitting in a box and not seeing your face,
right.
I mean, I really believe in, like, reading someone's face.
Oh, God. It's so
right?
Much
it's
better.
Invaluable.
Oh.
And so if I'm sitting next to you, it'll be a better interview if I have my idea of my preconceived notion of, like, where I think the interview is going to go. And that's the coolest thing about TV, because if all of a sudden I see that you're passionate about something else,
right.
screw the questions. Let's
yes.
go. Let's roll another way.
Right, right.
And so I think that makes for more compelling TV. That's kind of what I mean.
And you have an interesting theory on covering stories, because you've done a lot of field stuff.
I have a theory.
Or point of view. You do. You didn't know that. See,
Wow.
It says, when I'm covering a story, this is your quote, it's not just about gathering facts, but it's gathering the human element as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's about these people. It's not about you or how jacked up your hair looks. That is such a great line.
So something I would say.
That is so, like, and then I want to talk about the story, the tornado in Oklahoma and Jackie Singh. And you tell that story, because I think it reflects this point of view you have.
So there were these horrible tornadoes. I mean, there were these tornadoes that rolled through Moore, Oklahoma. What was this, 2 years ago? And I went to field anchor, and I met this guy whose home wasn't totally destroyed, but the home across from him was. And the home across from him, they just had a newborn, and he was, like, legit saddened that it wasn't his home that was fully destroyed, because he felt for this young family.
Yeah.
And we had this moment where he was walking me through his home and, like, apologizing for it, because a storm had just gone through there. And I was just so overwhelmed by his grace and sense of humanity. And as he was talking, like, it's not about you. It's about Jackie Singh and all these other people that I interview. I don't want to inject myself in the story. I'm not the story. And so I think the biggest thing is just to listen. And then he just started to weep, and you just let those moments hang.
And speak for themselves. Yeah, yeah. And how do you handle the other side of it? Obviously, you have compassion for that person in that moment. But if you have somebody who you just don't agree with fundamentally as a human being, right, and says something that just, you know, like if they said that to you at a bar, or you'd, like, rip their head off.
Right, punch them in the face.
Do you let yourself go there? Do you let yourself go there a little bit and give an opinion about it?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm trying to think of an example where I We try not to, if there's somebody who's totally insane, I try not to give them oxygen, at least in my real estate of 2 hours. But listen, I want to hear different opinions. And I remember having somebody on my show one time, I think we were talking about transgendered issues a couple of years ago, and he just totally insulted somebody who was somebody else who was with me on TV. And I'm not going to, again, it's not about me, so I'm not going to make this big, I'm going to yank your, you know, microphone, sir, or anything like that. But I think in a way you absolutely have to call them out.
Right.
It's, I'm not doing my job if I'm not calling them out and telling them, you know, if they're absolutely wrong or in being a jerk.
But when someone is sort of, not necessarily rude, but just...
That's when you can see my face and I do the like...
I've seen you a couple of times just go, hang on a minute, hang on a minute. Yeah. And that's what I admire about you. But there are times, not just you, but I've watched journalists on television or hear them on the radio and I'm like, how do you... I'm usually in the chair as a commentator, so I'm allowed to kind of have an opinion.
Right.
How do you... Like, I don't know, if someone says, you know, the Confederate flag is good and slavery wasn't a bad thing and it helped some... like, which is what you're hearing some people say right now.
Then I leave it to you to eviscerate the person.
Paul,
I'm going to tee you up. Boom.
You're up.
Go.
Where is cable news for you? I think it's good, but there's also been some bad to it. It's made us a very divisive society politically. Like, right?
Wait,
like,
you're blaming the media?
No. In the sense of, I feel like sometimes people are talking over each other and not to each other, and they're locked in. And I think CNN is the most objective of the networks.
I happen to agree.
And I think that you know, you go on Fox, and I've gone on that. It's like you get the guy next to you with the 8 talking points that were handed to him or whatever. And, you know, and sometimes you get that on the left too, right? They got, and so like, how conscious of you, are you of that? And sort of how do you remain objective in a world, in a business, in an industry where there seems to be value in just chasing ratings, which means feed the beast, right? Like Fox feeds that beast. Mm-hmm. There's conservatives that want to hear that thing, and MSNBC, the liberals, the same thing. I'm not picking on you. This, how do you personally, and this as an institution, navigate those waters?
I always try to be as fair as I possibly can.
Yeah.
I always am telling my executive producer, like, I don't do yelling. That's just not what I do. So I don't, and I have had yellers on my show. I've sat out there in the newsroom and like the newsroom gets quiet because, I mean, people don't realize I'm on a set and I'm surrounded by people. And so I'll get people on who get really passionate. And I mean, and we'll go rogue and let the segment go 15 minutes if it's really incredible and passionate. But I also like want to make sure there's meat on the bone.
Yeah.
If people are being yelling for yelling's sake, how am I educating a viewer? How is that, you know, I don't know, how is that substantive? So I think people who know me and who come on my show, I don't do that. And I do think that CNN, like, I totally drink the CNN Kool-Aid. I believe in what we do. I love being here and continue to stay here for a reason. And
yeah,
I really believe we are objective and fair. And
yeah, I think it's, you know, it's funny because I've worked on The Daily Show and people say, oh, I get all my news from there. I'm like, that's not good. Go get your news everywhere. And don't just read all points
absolutely.
Of view.
Absolutely. Conservative, read the right, liberal, absolutely.
Read everything and make your own fucking decision.
Totally.
Right? Like, I'm an issues guy. It's not, I'm not an ideologue. It's not like, oh, left, all right, whatever. It's like, and I think that, you know, that's what I meant. I wasn't blaming the media, but I just think people like to be in camps. It's like high school, right? Like, so there's the jocks and there's the nerds and there's the whatever.
Yes.
And
I think we like our labels.
Yeah. And I think the same thing, like people feel warm and fuzzy when they know there's a bunch of conservatives or a bunch of liberals that feel that way. And I feel like, you know, the good thing is, but how do you guys here not sort of want to go that road of, it's hard to stay the middle ground because the middle ground.
Well, I think opinions are exciting and great, but it's not my job to have the opinion. It's for you to have the opinion when you come on my show or anyone else to come on my show and to have that compelling TV with those guests. To me, that's the special sauce. It's like that. It's who you bring on and what those opinions are and how you also tell just a really special story. We have amazing correspondents too that are all over the world, and I think that in that sense, like if we didn't have the breaking news today, I was talking to my EP today. I was like, guys, we've got to run the Arwa Damon piece with these tunnels that ISIS has made in Syria. I mean, that's so CNN, and it's this fascinating, brilliant story. And so I think we have that competitive edge too. Just we can cover news like no one else can.
Yeah.
Like legit.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah. Are there issues that you want to tackle on your show that you haven't done yet, or that you have tried to do and it's been difficult to do for whatever reason?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think anytime there's like a like women's issues, I'm really big on that, or making sure I have like strong women on.
Right.
I you know, one of the biggest compliments anyone's ever given me is that I'm a woman's woman, and mm-hmm. so. And I think also really, I think the stories that really move me are the ordinary people in extraordinary situations.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've interviewed a ton of cool celebrities and have some pretty, you know, fun buddies. But I really prefer like throw me out in the field, like as difficult as it is. It actually, I missed this horrendous story in Charleston, South Carolina. I was on the plane going to Rio and I started seeing the news trickling in my inbox and I just like, my heart sank.
Mm.
For what had happened.
Yeah.
And it was really hard actually not being there.
Yeah.
You know, my brother was like, Brooke, put your phone away.
Yeah.
Because I would have loved to have helped these people tell the story.
Yeah.
And to talk to them.
Well, you brought music, you're passionate about music.
Mm-hmm.
And you did a couple of things. You did a countdown from Nashville, and you did Music Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you, a country?
No.
Rock?
I'm an everything but country girl, which is funny because I'm from the South. Yeah, I was so proud of that. We called it Music Mondays and it lasted for about a year. And so I really tried to bring music to CNN. I'm a total music nerd.
Mm.
And yeah, I would spend a lot of my time, my extracurricular, just shooting, going to see bands and talking to them and hanging out backstage. And
this go back to being in college? You were like, where did this bug come?
I think it came honestly from my dad. My dad was a music guy. He played guitar. And I think also like world music. I mean, I took an ethnomusicology course in college and know way more about bossa nova than, you know, I should. Brazilian jazz, it influenced the jazz age of the 50s.
Geez, you're a nerd about a lot of things.
I am kind of a wonk. but yeah, so, you know, that's when I got to meet Dolly and Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson?
Oh, we're buds. He is awesome.
Oh, yeah? That's pretty awesome.
Who else? I like smaller bands, too. I just like the Decembrists. Death Cab for Cutie.
It's nice that you're giving exposure to these.
You know, they're little-known bands.
Yeah, but like, you know what
I'm
I mean?
Kidding.
Yeah,
they're
like,
huge.
Yeah, but like you... is it something you want to do again,
Cindy
or is
Lauper.
It?
I anytime I get to, like when we had Bill Withers was on,
mm.
who is a songwriter who people may not know the name, but he was just inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a couple of months ago, and I had him on my show. Anytime that there's like anyone who could be newsworthy who is a musician, like Stevie Wonder would be such a bucket list interview.
Mm.
But
well, you could get that. I mean,
he's not really doing a ton of press right now. Trust me, we've made phone calls.
Really?
Yeah, if you know anyone. If anyone listening knows anyone who knows anyone who knows Stevie Wonder,
please contact,
give him my number.
You'll get a signed headshot from Brooke Baldwin.
Yeah,
so
I
what's next
place.
For you on the adventure front? Are you going to like parachute off the Empire State Building or something like that?
I would love a tour of the Empire State Building, actually, to like see. I'm such a nerd about the lights in the Empire State Building and how they like turn different.
Were you a handful as a kid growing up? Like, Ma, why is ketchup red? Because it's red. Ma, why does
the sun
come up?
Oh my God, you're gonna cry. Yes.
Because I can hear your family going, it's just red, that's why.
But if it weren't red, like what makes it red, Mom? And where does that come from?
You see, what's red is my face right now.
I don't know what's next for me. Honestly, like I don't really plan these things out entirely. I probably should be more of a planner, and I'm not. I'm sort of like a last minute, let's just roll with it. If we're gonna,
yeah,
jump.
You're never gonna be a planner. This is the nature of what you
it's
do.
It's the nature of what I do.
You go on live TV, you love it. You're jumping.
But
off
I am
mountains.
A look forwarder. I love like having. I love having things on a calendar, but I am. I like to do a lot last.
Your favorite
minute.
Thing to do is what right now? Like I mean, I know
travel.
You travel. Yeah.
Travel, hear music, stand up comedy.
Not just like sleep in on a weekend.
No, I love some good Z's.
Yeah.
But I've allowed my pug to sleep with me the last year that I've moved here. I've like had this weird, you know, dog owner guilt that I keep moving him around, and so he's like this little wiggly being.
He keeps waking you up.
He keeps waking me up. But I like
you're
I'm
not supposed to let your dog that's it. Now once you open that door,
he's
it's 12, like a kid.
Paul. He's 12.
Oh,
and
so
I've never in his little
die?
Life
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
And silence.
I'll come to the funeral.
Paul?
No, he's 12.
You're horrible.
I know,
get out of my office.
So why? You got to put him in a crate.
He's 12. Like, he used to be crate trained. He, all of those things.
He's a but dog. Just, he's living in an apartment. He's got air conditioning.
He's, like, living the life, dude.
Exactly.
I know, but this little...
Who watches him while you're here?
I have people.
Oh, see?
The dog people.
See what I mean? This dog lives better than I did as a kid. I used to have to make my epileptic grandmother scrambled eggs for lunch. I did. That's true.
See? And you would be sleeping with your pug, too.
And empty your catheter bag.
I am such a sucker. I'm a total sucker. So whatever. So I'm not sleeping in super late on the weekends.
Take your dog. You should take your dog to Saint-Tropez for a weekend.
You'd take that. Yeah. You'd take that.
Why don't you do 2 hours where we just come on and screw around and like make jokes and just riff? Look out for Brooke Baldwin in her next adventure where she's going to get shot out of a cannon across Grand Canyon.
Where can I find a cannon?
You would totally do that. And then as you're going across, you'd ask somebody questions. What is the depth of the Grand Canyon?
What's the cactus here? And why is the cactus this color?
You're totally
calling me out, and I love it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Lots of questions. Well, thank you for doing this. You're the best.
Thank you.
And everybody watch CNN 2 to 4 Eastern time.
Woo-hoo.
Every Monday through Friday.
This is CNN.
To see the fabulous Brooke Baldwin.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, that was Brooke Baldwin, my friend from CNN. I've been a guest on her show. Hope you enjoyed it. I thought it was a really great conversation, a really great window into what she does and how she does it. And check me out October 28th to the 30th, West Palm Beach Improv, West Palm Beach, Florida. And please go to iTunes and review the podcast, everybody. See you next week.